Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hi all, and welcome to the second episode in our two-part series on dealing with poor performance. In our last episode, we discussed some steps that HR can take to help prevent poor performance in the workplace. If you haven't listened yet, then do so now. Today, we'll be discussing the steps you should take when it comes to actually addressing issues arising from poor performance. I am joined by Laura Barry, HR consultant with Insight HR, and Mary Cullen, founder and managing director. Welcome back to you both.
Thanks, Hi, Sarah.
So Mary, let's jump right into it. When a manager has failed to address poor performance informally, what are some of the options available?
Well, I guess the next step could be to put in place a structured performance improvement plan. And a performance improvement plan is simply that. It's an opportunity for the employee to get very specific guidance about the ways in which they need to perform over a short period of time. Typically, a performance improvement plan will be a 12-week plan, and there will be very specific metrics that the manager has put in place, and that manager will meet with the employee at various intervals depending on the job and the role and the busyness, I guess, of all of the individuals, and review every period how that person is performing against those key metrics, and documenting the process. If at the end of that kind of a process there is no improvement in performance and the manager has warned the employee that if they don't make the necessary improvements that the company will have no option but to proceed formally through the discipline process, then the next stage is a formal disciplinary process, which in most cases, managers, human resources, and employees want to avoid.
And with the performance improvement plan, how long would that generally take? How long do you recommend that lasting? Or
It varies from company to company, Sarah. I would say the ideal would be 12 weeks. But, you know, believe it or not, I've seen some incredibly long performance improvement plans, which you've always got to be careful from the employee perspective that they're not too long. The longest I've ever seen has run over the course of a year. And from the employee perspective, that's quite a lot of pressure on the individual. The manager actually means well, or meant well, in that particular set of circumstances. But if performance isn't improving after a short period of time, then I think the company really has no option but to proceed formally.
And so what do you think is the right way to put a performance improvement plan in place then? You mentioned kind of metrics, stating how long the performance improvement plan might be in place for. And then I suppose, is it kind of letting the employee know what might happen if they fail to improve? Is that kind of...
I guess it should come on the back of informal discussions that the manager has already had with the employee. Mm-hmm. So a performance improvement plan shouldn't just be sprung on an employee, if they aren't aware in the first instance that there are problems with their performance. So my view would be that the employee would need plenty of discussion with their manager, and it's only after informal methods have failed that the manager will put in place such a structured program. And, you know, obviously they will be sitting down with the employee and discussing that performance improvement plan with them and what it looks like, and inviting the employee for input. Because remember, it's designed to improve performance. It's not part of exiting someone, although on many occasions it's used for that purpose.
And actually, I was just going to throw another question at you there. Sorry now, Mary, I'm throwing everything at you. But in terms of the disciplinary process that you mentioned, does that always result in a termination at the end of a performance improvement plan if the employee hasn't met the expectations required?
No. I mean, if you look at putting in place something like a performance improvement plan, that might run for a period of 3 months. And I don't think it should run any longer than that. I would recommend that it shouldn't really run for longer than that, unless somebody is being sick during that period. And then a normal disciplinary process can take up to 12 months before a company would be in a position to dismiss an employee. So remember, if you were to move along your disciplinary process, work all your way through from a verbal warning to a written warning to a first written warning, maybe a final written warning, and termination of employment comes after that. All of the time you have to give the employee opportunity to improve and direction around the ways in which they can improve. Warnings only remain live on a file for predetermined periods of time. Typically, a verbal warning will remain on a file for 3 to 6 months, and a written warning will remain on a file for 12 months. And after that, they expire and they can't be used as part of any disciplinary process. So generally, you've got to be able to demonstrate that you're giving the employee ample opportunity to improve at each and every step of the way.
On that point about the verbal warning, Mary, I know just in like discussions that we've had ourselves, I think in our last kind of lunch and learn session we did, we talked about verbal warnings and actually how important it is that those verbal warnings are actually documented. So even though they're called verbal warnings, they do have to have some kind of documentation of that having happened. Is that kind of correct? What would that look like?
Yeah, so I mean, if you're inviting an employee into a formal disciplinary process, you're going to write out to them and advise them of the case against them in the first instance. You're going to tell them that they're entitled to have representation in line with the company policy, and that's typically a work colleague or a trade union representative. And you will be giving them an opportunity at a disciplinary hearing to respond to the case against them before ever you make a decision in relation to a possible sanction. If at the end of a disciplinary process, the management team, whoever that is, decides to issue a sanction of a verbal warning, then they will be communicating that sanction to the employee, obviously verbally in the first instance, but you're following up in writing to let somebody know that you've just issued them with a verbal warning. And you know what, it's really funny, because I guess a lot of managers take a verbal warning literally and tell you that they have given someone a verbal warning, but there's no follow-up action to it. And therefore, all it could be considered is an informal caution. So managers, I guess, need to be very careful about that. A verbal warning is always followed up in writing.
Thanks a million, Mary. I'll give you a bit of a break now. I'll go to Laura. I was throwing a whole load of questions at you there.
That's okay.
Laura, what do you think are some of the dangers then that HR needs to be aware of when it comes to actually addressing poor performance? We actually mentioned one just there about the verbal warning needing to be kind of documented.
Yeah, and I think as Mary said as well, you know, it is the line manager in the first instance that is responsible for addressing poor performance. And I suppose HR's involvement, they only really get involved generally when a disciplinary process is progressing to whatever stage, and the HR may be the chain of communication or whatever it may be, and involved in conducting a disciplinary meeting. But I suppose it is a very good question, Sarah, because caution and care is key when deciding how to deal with poor performance. And I suppose it's really important to consider the way you communicate with employees before addressing substandard levels of work or performance. So an employee may be completely unaware of their level of performance, and to them everything is absolutely fantastic, maybe a complete blow to their confidence if this is the first time ever hearing from their manager. So handling it incorrectly can result in more problems being created. So managing, you know, as we know, managing poor performance, it's expensive, it's time consuming, it's litigious, and it is really, really stressful. But one of the things HR needs to be mindful of, you know, is very much ensuring that managers are trained in, you know, setting objectives and clear expectations from the outset. So regular reviews, as we spoke about earlier, giving and receiving feedback, and, you know, when rolling out probationary policies and performance management systems, HR does need to be confident that there's consistency relating to how managers deal with addressing poor performance in the workplace. So, you know, the do's and the don'ts, and whether that's delivered as a workshop to managers or a direct line manager comes to HR for advice, early detection is key. But one of the dangers is a manager maybe taking it on themselves to address it without following the correct guidance or the correct protocol. So two things there really, that managers not appropriately trained on maybe the soft skills required, and then the second one is not following procedures. So not giving sufficient time to make the employee aware that there's an issue, and not giving the required amount of time to improve. So I think, you know, it would be naive of a HR manager or HR professional to just assume that managers have the necessary skills to manage poor performance. And that's absolutely, you know, no disrespect to any line managers, because this is a very complex and it is a very challenging area. So there are necessary steps to take before a person, I suppose, or an employee approaches a disciplinary route for poor performance. And my fear always is that HR need to be ensuring that all managers are appropriately adhering to, we'll say, the likes of the probationary policy that we spoke about earlier, the delivery of performance management that we mentioned, and also fully in tune with the company's disciplinary procedure, giving and allowing reasonable time for improvement. You know, and there needs to be a paper trail of attempts made to bring an employee to the required standard, and then also a paper trail, I suppose, of examples of poor behaviour and poor performance. So keeping the process very open, very, very fair and very transparent.
That's brilliant, Laura. Just while you were talking about the probation period there, you know, if someone is on probation and they're not performing well, what is the best way to handle it? Like, do you just wait until their probation ends and then dismiss them, or how is that handled?
Well, I suppose in the first instance, Sarah, the reason for having a probationary period is to allow for a specific period of time during, you know, an employee's overall suitability for a role is formally assessed. And if there are issues or early warning signs that the primary purpose of having a probationary period to begin with is to bring about a sustained improvement in performance and to ensure that the employee has had sufficient opportunities to achieve that. So it's, you know, it is very important, obviously, to have a probationary policy there and furthermore to follow it. But the best way to handle poor performance is adhering to the guidelines in the policy, but it's meant to be a positive collaborative process. And an employee, you know, does need time to integrate into their new role. And, you know, to be fair and reasonable to an employee and to allow them that opportunity, it can take time to integrate and to make a difference. And to allow then, I suppose, within a particular time period for a fair assessment of that employee's performance, their behavior, and, you know, their overall suitability to that role within a particular time frame. You know, there's different probationary period durations depending on the length and type of contract. So, for example, if you have a contract for a period of less than, we'd say, 6 months, a probationary period may be for 2 months. So if you have a contract greater than 12 months or a contract of indefinite duration, the probationary period might be for 6 months. So, you know, it gives time, or, you know, to allow for suitability and all the rest. And that's the reason. This is why the person is recruited in the first place, obviously. So during that time, I suppose the line manager holds regular reviews with the employee, gives feedback and all of that. But I would recommend that, you know, there's regular review meetings, whether that be at 2.5 months and then again at 5.5 months before the 6 months period you know, expires or whatever. But I suppose to remember, you know, at each stage, the line manager should provide feedback and reasonable support to help that employee to reach the expected standard. So to get back to your question, do you have to wait? During probation, either party can terminate at 1 week's notice. You know, it's certainly a challenging area, and there are some cases that have taken effect, and, you know, certainly, as I said, care and caution needs to be followed in this regard. Would you agree, Mary, on that?
Yeah, I think right at the outset that you've really got to go back and look at your contract of employment and your policies and procedures, and you need to ensure that the probationary clause contains the scope to allow the organisation to terminate the contract for no reason at all. And although you can terminate a contract of employment for poor performance, there is no requirement in those circumstances to use fair procedures. But that doesn't prevent an employer from using fair procedures during the probationary period. And to be honest, I would encourage them always to, you know, be as fair as possible, because remember, other employees are looking on and judging what the organization is doing. They're judging the manager, and they're looking at how fairly or otherwise you treat an individual. So I would always be inclined to use fair procedures. However, on the point of law, you're not required to if it's only poor performance. If you're looking at the termination of employment in circumstances of misconduct during the probationary period, it's probably best to do that in line with the company's disciplinary policy, or expressly setting out how misconduct or behavioural issues will be dealt with during the probationary period, and putting that as a very separate and distinct part of the disciplinary process, which allows you to terminate the employment early if you need to.
That's brilliant, Laura and Mary. And that is all we have time for today.
So my three key takeaways for today's episode then, and I will try to make these a little bit shorter than my previous takeaways. So my first takeaway: if a manager has flagged a poor performance issue with HR, then it's really important to establish whether they've had informal discussions with the employee in question, as that really is the first stage in addressing the issue, after which then it would be a performance improvement plan, generally to be in place for a period of 12 weeks or less. And then the next stage is the disciplinary process if necessary, which brings me on to my second takeaway, which is to make sure to keep a paper trail to show that you have followed fair procedure. And that includes documenting every stage, including a verbal warning. Now, that name can be a bit misleading, as it does actually need to be documented. It's not enough to just, you know, say, oh, well, 6 weeks ago, I had an informal chat with this employee, gave them a verbal warning. You know, the details around that verbal warning actually need to be documented. And then my third takeaway is that if an employee is on probation and there are issues, then you may be able to terminate with 1 week's notice. But this is a challenging area, and care and caution needs to be taken. So make sure you check what is in the contract of employment, and make sure the probationary clause allows for this. But our advice would always be to be as fair as possible anyway, you know, even if the employment contract allows for that you know, remember that other employees are actually looking on and judging. So it's important you show that you treat all employees fairly. And those are my takeaways for today.
So thanks to you both for joining us this afternoon and sharing your wisdom and insights with us. And I look forward to catching up with you again both soon.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.